My name is Dr. Ali Benazir, and I am very pleased today to have with me as our guest Nicole Dadone.
And hi.
Hello, Nicole.
Hi. Hi, great to be here.
Everybody say hi, Nicole.
Hello.
Hi.
So Nicole wrote this fabulous book that just came out called Slow Sex, but what you may not realize that the book is actually the culmination of many years of work that she has done. And today we have the privilege of having her, and she's going to tell us all about the particular practice that she kind of came up with. And first, I want to tell you the story of how we met. So a couple of weeks ago, I was at this TEDx San Francisco, where they had a series of speakers on the entire life cycle. So the idea was that we start from the beginning. So we started from the end, so death and old age, and then middle adulthood, then youth and adolescence, then childbirth, and then orgasm. That's what gets the whole thing started. And as it turns out, Nicole was the person who was going to be speaking about that part. And I had the great pleasure of bumping into her at the speaker's reception the night before. We had a spirited conversation. And the next day, she went on stage, and she completely blew me away. So today, we're going to talk about all that stuff. And my privilege to introduce to you Nicole Dadone.
Great to be here. Great.
Fantastic. So, Nicole, the part that I found most intriguing about your talk was your whole initiation into this. So would you be willing to share how you found out about this?
That was the part that got you? Okay, so I was moving into the Zen Center. I had, you know, pretty solid sitting practice. And I went to a party, and I, you know, I met this guy, and he was a Buddhist. And so in my mind, it was like he was a Buddhist. You know, I was very elitist at the time. So I was talking to him, and he, out of the blue, said, "I want to show you this sexuality practice." And I said, "Huh?" And he said, "I want to show you this sexuality practice." And then he proceeded to describe it to me. And he described it as, you'll take your pants off, I'll leave all of my clothes on, I'll put all of my attention on your orgasm for 15 minutes, and at the end, you're free to go. Oh, and I'll only use my hands. And I think I just went into such a state of shock that it happened.
It happened. And could you explain what this "it" is?
Well, at the time, it's funny, he lived at an ashram, and I went back to his place with him. This is so funny to actually say at the beginning of a call. But so I went back to his place with him, and he did what he said he was going to do. You know, I just found myself there, like with my legs butterflied open, and then he started to do this practice. And do you want me to describe it?
Well, I think that's the punchline, but we're going to get into that a little bit later. But what I find remarkable about your story is that you started as a very serious practitioner of meditation and Buddhism.
Right.
And so, you know, I want people to realize that this does not come out of some, you know, crazy kinky commune that came up with this and, hey, let's do this, but okay, rather, you know, you know, somebody who was very serious about attaining, say, the highest state of highest states of consciousness that a human being can achieve, found this to be consonant with all those practices, and thereby you kind of fell in love with it.
Yeah, I think, you know, I was in a place, I love pristine states of any nature, and my mentor was Alan Watts's mentor. And, you know, I was going all the way in that direction. I was positive that that was the direction I was going. And had it not been that I had an experience where I broke through and where I actually touched a truth that was so deep, it was undeniable, I'm sure I would still be going in that direction.
Very interesting. And one other thing that I find interesting about is that so much of Buddhist and meditation practice is about withdrawal from the world. And this sounds a little bit more like, say, tantric practice, which is about engaging and really using your senses to achieve that same goal, which is higher consciousness.
Right. I think, I think it's funny. Somebody, I was talking with somebody about it the other day, and they said, what? You went from Zen Buddhism into this practice of orgasm? Aren't those diametrically opposed? I think on the top layers, you know, they are, but I think down deep they aren't. They're about really sinking into your body and being so absorbed and so concentrated that there's no room for thought. And, you know, in Tibetan Buddhism, for example, they describe the stages of enlightenment with respect to orgasm, and orgasm is actual enlightenment in some, you know, Tibetan belief, where, because it's the only time, you know, basically that the cortex just shuts down and there is no identity, there is no self that's acting.
Fascinating. Yeah, no, I totally hear you. And I was listening to, I watched this movie about astronomy and physics and these things, and one of the physicists brought to my attention that, you know, we are never in the present, because whatever's coming at us through the world, through our five senses, happened in the past.
Right.
And, you know, even if it's, so a star, okay, that's billions of light years away, that definitely happened in the past when that light hits you. But even the person sitting across the room from you, it takes time for the light to hit your retina, it takes time for the voice to hit your ear, and it takes time for it to get processed. So in a way, we are never fully present when we're attending to our senses. And it struck me that, you know, Zen, they says that just sitting down and being fully present is enlightenment, and I think orgasm is one of the only times when actually you're not getting sensation from the outside, it's all from the inside. It's your brain attending to itself, and that in that moment you are one with presence and the universe.
Exactly, yeah.
But enough trying to promote orgasm as a good thing. I have a feeling that this audience may already be sold on that. Let's talk a little bit more about what this is. And first of all, so you call it orgasmic meditation, and is it pronounced O-M, or is it OM? How, what's the proper nomenclature here?
OM.
OM, there you go. Mm-hmm. Very appropriate. And so give us a brief instruction on what the practice is.
So I'll first distinguish between orgasm and sex, because I think that's one of the things that I'm interested in doing, is kind of building out a really different understanding. When the two get conflated, I think, you know, I think what we know of sex is either this, like, you know, feather boas and this drama and this writhing and toys, or we know sort of like this, you know, this ornamental spiritual thing where you have to use foreign languages for your genitals and, you know, hours of activity. And I don't think we know just sort of like bare awareness or bare orgasm. And that's really what I'm interested in bringing forward. And, you know, like, it's called, the book is called Slow Sex, because I fell in love with this idea. You know, Alice Waters had gone to French cooking. Pardon?
Slow food?
Yeah, exactly. And she had gone to cooking school in France, and she was so accustomed to like the foreign languages and the heavy sauces, and she really just wanted to like taste the food, you know, the really fresh ingredients. And that's what this practice is about. It's just like having that pure sense of orgasm.
Mm-hmm. You found a whole organization. So your organization is called One Taste. And at first, I thought it was something having to do with Ken Wilber, because he has something with that too. But so One Taste goes back to the whole Buddhist tradition. Mm. So fill us in about how you came up with the name, mm-hmm. and also the organization itself.
So there's a Buddhist mm-hmm. expression. Once you've had one taste of the Buddhist expression is just as the ocean has but one taste, the taste mm-hmm. of salt, so does the taste of liberation, the taste of truth. And that was what happened for me. It was like, when I had that experience, I just felt like I tasted the truth in a way that I could never turn back again. So that's, we founded the whole organization on that. That's the one taste, is that taste of orgasm.
Excellent. And what do you guys do?
So we do, we primarily, I'm interested in redefining orgasm and actually building it out as its own world. And then from there, we do coaching and classes. We have a whole online world that we've developed and are continuing to develop, and so that there's multiple forms of entry. You know, like it's a very touchy subject, and so I want it to be that there's as little barrier to entry as possible.
Excellent. Now, one thing that I noticed, so I met Nicole at this conference, but I was primed for the meeting by one of the chapters in Tim Ferriss's newest book called The 4-Hour Body, in which he talks about the 15-minute orgasm, which is an intriguing title because, you know, does that mean it takes 15 minutes to get to the orgasm? Does that mean that the 15 minutes is how long the orgasm lasts? So clarify that for us. What is an orgasm in this particular practice, and what do the 15 minutes refer to?
So the 15 minutes is the amount of time, which is similar to if you do sitting meditation, you'll have like a 15-minute session. And so we start with a 15-minute session for people. And one of the things that I discovered in that first practice and have, you know, nearly 10,000 hours since discovered is that our bodies are, in not like in a trippy cosmic way, but in a really physical way, our body's natural state is orgasm, and that we tend to clench it or lock it down in so many ways that over time it doesn't move in its normal dynamic way that it's meant to, and that with enough practice what can happen is you can, you know, put your finger down on the woman's genitals or, you know, on a man's body, and all of the signs and symptoms that you know orgasm or climax to be begin to appear. So you'll see ejaculate, you'll see the swelling, you'll see the contractions, you'll see the light layer of perspiration. It's just a different method to getting there. So rather than harder and faster and rubbing, it's taking the whole goal off. And when you do that, a person's body naturally begins to open into that state.
So it's not necessarily not just climax. It's kind of this complex of feelings and sensations which may or may not lead to climax. Do I understand that correctly?
Yes. And I would add that the like after a period of practice, the sensation starts at the level of intensity or can start at the level of intensity of climax in terms of, you know, the involuntary contractions that you experience, it can, like, the minute a finger goes down on a woman's body,
they start.
Right.
Got it. Okay, so I think we've been tantalizing the audience enough with the practice, you know, the finger goes down. So if we give them, like, an outline of what happens in a session, let's walk them through that.
Okay, great. So it would be a 15-minute session in this case, and all for purposes of ease, assume that the stroker is a man and the person being stroked is a woman, so that I can say she and he. But it can be done with the same sex or in different positions. So she will lie down. She'll butterfly her legs open. She'll put a pillow underneath both of her knees. He will put one leg underneath her knees and one over her belly and sit next to her. The next thing he'll do is he'll put his thumb, his right thumb, at the base of her introitus, and then he will stroke with lubrication on his finger to her upper left-hand quadrant of her clitoris.
Okay, and that's pretty important. The upper right hand of the woman or the man?
So it's the upper left-hand quadrant, and it's her upper left. And if her clitoris were a clock, it would be the 1 o'clock position.
There you go.
Good. And then he will stroke very simply up, down, up, down, up, down, with a pressure that's no greater than you would stroke an eyebrow.
Okay.
And he'll do
very,
that.
Very light pressure.
Very, very, like, it's shocking. I repeat it again and again because it's shocking to people how light the pressure is. But if you think about it, for example, in sitting meditation, what you're focusing on, like in Vipassana, would be the just your breath on your upper lip. Mm-hmm. And that can bring you to these very, very, very intense states. So it's going to be a very, very light stroke.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And is there a particular opening to the practice? Is there something that the guy says to set the stage?
No. And that's part of the beauty of it, is that it's simple and that it is, in and of itself, just the mere asking, like, you know, he'll say, would you like to Om, or she'll ask to Om, and then you just set to the practice. There's no additional ritual. What's showcased is the orgasm itself.
Got it. Okay. So you describe once how the man goes through a description of the female genitalia. Okay, this is what I'm seeing, this is what I'm observing. So is that optional, or was that particular flourish that that other practitioner added? Do you recommend the guys do
that? Okay, great, yes. So, yes, one of the things that you can do, especially as a beginning practitioner, is go through and do what we call hypnosing, or noticing the obvious. And this is actually, I'm sorry I missed this part, because it was really, for me, one of the most emotional things I had ever experienced when it first happened. And he would go through and he would describe, but in a value-neutral way, exactly what he sees. So he would describe, for example, your outer labia are a coral color, your inner labia have a deep, rich wine color, there's a slight drop of ejaculate, I'm noticing swelling as I'm looking at it. And, you know, when this happened for me, I started crying. I had never had my genitals looked at with compassion. It was either like lust and hunger or kind of, you know, disgust, but never just direct, clean attention on me. And it was profound.
Now, in the emails leading up to this conference call, I told my readers that what Nicole is doing is borderline revolutionary. And this is one of the reasons why. It's because it's changing the relationship you have to your body. It's changing the relationship you have with sex. And also, you know, it's shining light, literally and figuratively, upon parts of the sexual act and parts of your body that have been kept in the dark. I mean, how many people like to keep the lights on as they're having
right.
sex? How many people like to have things described and seen closely? It's almost like they're trying to hide it all. And you know what? We grew up. We have access to the cookie jar anytime we want. And here's this pretty much unlimited fount of joy and potentially even much more than that. So you say that something like this can revolutionize male-female relationships. What is it that you mean by that, Nicole?
Well, I think my personal experience, and, you know, at this point we've had thousands of people come through One Taste, and the experience is pretty universal that I've seen. You know, there have definitely been people who have gone through other experiences, but for the most part, the experience is that people begin to reset their center of gravity to a much deeper zone so that, you know, we don't realize how much time we spend in our heads, you know, and even how much time we spend in our heads in the middle of things that are meant to be pleasurable. We even miss our most pleasurable acts. Like one of the things that I said in the TED Talk was that the minute, you know, he started stroking me, I was wondering whether or not I looked attractive, whether or not I was doing it right, whether or not I was creepy, whether or not we were going to get married. Like I wondered all of these things. And I was like, here I am. I'm actually in the middle of a sex act, although I wouldn't really call it sex, but I'm in the middle of having my genitals stroked and I'm thinking. And that is, it was just this moment when I realized, oh, my God, you know, that is where I usually am. And so to have something be so compelling that it pulls us down into our bodies and down into our sensations has a different, has us operate by something different and something deeper, almost like what I'd call a native wisdom.
Right.
Where go ahead.
Go ahead. You know, what I really like about this is that it's not just, it can be seen from so many different angles, and I think maybe this is some kind of, you know, side door to meditation, because most people equate meditation with, you know, it's difficult, it's boring, it requires a lot of willpower, but, you know, if your meditation is basically a 15-minute orgasm, suddenly it's not so tough to do. And this really does take you to a very similar space that meditation
right.
does, both for the men and for the women. And that leads into my next question, which is, okay, so let's say a woman started to do this OM practice, orgasmic meditation, and it's great. She's really enjoying it. In the meantime, the guy's hunched over, and he's focusing on the tip of his finger, probably getting a crick in his neck. So what's in it for the dude?
I have a feeling you know, but I'll answer anyway.
Hey, you wanted me to ask this question, so I'm asking this question. So,
so the first thing I would say is I'm going to just backtrack just a little bit and say, as you were talking about the side door to meditation, I thought that was such a beautiful way of saying it. And my experience is that it's not only is it a side door, but it's a pretty cool entry point in that I know that I had the most profound experiences I had ever had in my life in meditation. And they were ineffable. They were, you know, these places that I could never communicate to another human being, so they were also kind of isolating. So to have a practice where you're having those most profound experiences with another human being opens up a whole new potential in terms of your capacity to connect and really for the level of connection that can happen in a relationship. So that's my first answer. And then what's in it for the guy? It's interesting. I think there's evolutionary levels. So I think it begins at the most coarse level, and that is that most guys, like I know I'm going to be kind of crass and just say that most guys who come to me and initially, you know, it was just, we just had it be about orgasm, period. So most of these guys would come in and they would say, like, I just want to stroke pussy. That's all I want to do. Please, please. And then when we gave them as much as they wanted, then they actually started to fill up. And then we began to notice that there were these different levels of evolution in terms of why they were taking on this practice, similar to sitting meditation. Like when you first do sitting meditation, sometimes it's just because you feel crazy and you start to sit, but then you begin to fall more and more and more in love with the practice. And ultimately what I find is that men get a kind of freedom in this practice that they can't get anywhere else. One is they gain a kind of mastery in a domain that has forever been considered mysterious. Like something, there was a study done and something like 70% of men could not accurately label female genitalia. Just like it's just been held as this mystery. So to gain mastery in that arena gives a man a profound sense of confidence. But beyond that, it comes to the place where the practice itself is so rewarding in terms of hitting such deep levels of concentration that is what begins to drive him, just pure love of the practice.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, what's in it for the guys? I mean, I'm preaching the choir here, but, you know, it's fun. And one of the things that, as a man, I can tell you, men are very interested in when it comes to sex is seeing his woman having fun.
Right.
And so, you know, this is one of the most direct paths to that. And I also want to get back to the whole idea of savoring, because especially in modern times with
right.
everybody getting, like, you know, 110 emails a day, text messages, cell phone ringing, you know, this complete fragmentation of attention, Twitter, people really don't savor much at all. And especially in America, you know, lunch is this impediment, this speed bump that needs to be gotten through, and, you know, bring it to your desk and you eat it, and you don't even know what you're putting into your mouth. But you barely even taste the food. So here's an experience that, you know, I believe as much as anything that you want to experience in life deserves to be savored. And that is also done in a covert, you know, guilt-drenched, surreptitious, oh my God, should I be doing this? Am I dirty? Am I a nice girl? Am I a bad boy? What's going on here? And just removing all those layers of junk and just getting to the bare essence of, hey, here's a sensation that is good for you, that opens your heart, that opens your body. Why don't we just focus on this for a moment? And, you know, will it happen the very first time for some people? Yes. For some other people, hey, it's 15 minutes. You can do it four times in an hour and get good at it. So that's my pitch for the whole idea of savoring.
That was beautiful. That is that's the exact idea. And for me as a woman, I know that I had to move through so much conditioning to begin to approach my sexuality in a way that was savoring, that wasn't trying to, like, sneak and eat it really quickly. And so that, for me, that's what the, when the 15-minute timer was set, it made it kind of official, like I was actually doing something and I didn't have to sneak inside of it.
Ah, yes. Well, average length of intercourse in North America, 220 seconds. This would more than quadruple that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's a good start for things. So for those of us who joined the call late, I'll give you a brief preview. So we talked to Nicole Dadone, founder of One Taste and the practice of orgasmic meditation, and she gave us the brief outline of how it's done, and really that's how it's done, right? So the lady's lying down. She puts her legs over the legs of the man who is sitting at a 90-degree angle to her, and the man focuses all his attention on the 1 o'clock position of the clitoris and strokes very, very lightly with just the tip of the finger for 15 minutes with nothing else going on. Is that pretty much the whole thing?
That's it.
So, you know, it's and again, this goes back to so much of meditation, so much of the stuff that I've taught in my other classes, which is that any one technique that you use well and master can lead to amazing results. So, you know, here's another one, and it's pretty straightforward to learn. And that said, okay, so if we covered that in about, you know, 28 seconds, here's the technique. Why do we need a whole book about it, Nicole?
Well, I think there's a few reasons. One, a big one is that I think we need to do a lot of unlearning. You know, to my mind, most of what we know of sex is about adding on. And when I went to my publisher, I said, I don't want to write another recipe book. I actually want to teach people how to cook. And so a lot of it is about taking ideas off. That was a huge part of it for me. And then I think that there's also, you know, that, so that's the, everything you need to know for the beginning level. But there, you know, there are also 15 key points on the clitoris. And so, I mean, there's the beauty of this practice to me is also that it as far as I can tell, you know, after, like I said, nearly 10,000 hours, it's infinite, and another door keeps opening and opening and opening. The third reason is that when you begin to open your orgasm, when you actually begin to live this kind of desire-based life, it becomes key to change the entire ecology. So
what do you
mean all
by
of a sudden, ecology? Relationship looks different. Your identity as a man or as a woman looks very different. Your concept of purpose looks different because you can actually feel things in a much deeper and different way. And the incentive of that feeling of orgasm, of being on inside of your body, demands a tremendous amount of honesty, both with yourself and with the people around you. So it's altering your life.
Altering your whole life. And ladies and guys, I want you to realize that, you know, 10,000 hours is a lot. So, you know, Nicole she demonstrates what I think is the hallmark of true mastery, which is humility, right? So when somebody really, really gets it, they don't come off as some kind of, hey, look at me, but she's just fully in it. So when I open it up for question and answer session, please take advantage of this time that you have with her, because she is a busy, busy woman, and it's a great privilege that we have her today with us. And she's also speaking from, like, the far side of having gone through 10,000 hours of practice and seeing thousands of people being transformed by this. So I think that's very salient data that needs to be conveyed to people, and that, I think, is one of the reasons why the book is so great, because it has the subtleties, it has, you know, here's the entry level. By the way, this call is going to be full of innuendo. Anything we say will be interpreted as innuendo, so I'm sorry, just going to have to deal with it. I told a friend, you know, it's very, it comes out of left field and it's out of the box, and yeah, there's no way around that. So I digress. So yes, the book is great. So you should get the book because, first of all, the practice is fully there, and second of all, the things that go around it are there. The superstructure that holds the whole thing up, and also the layers of the onion that you may need to peel off before you really get into it. One of the parts that I really liked about the book, though, was you have this little bonus two chapters, chapters 6 and 7, on what men should know about women and what women should know about men, because I'm guessing after dealing with so many men and women in such an intimate setting where, you know, this is about as honest as things get, they had some revelatory information to convey to you.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's been amazing. We do, one of the things that we do in our classes is we have the men teach the women a course, and we have the women teach the men a course. And those two chapters are culled down from, you know, all of myriad courses. And it has been such an incredible awakening for me to watch, basically, what's so interesting is to watch the same course being taught again and again and again with different people inside of it. And one of the biggest things that I've learned is women have no idea how deeply men want to please us.
And hallelujah.
And so you have this extraordinarily contorted view of how things go, where women assume that men only want to get something from us. They have no idea. And so we come from this place of withholding and passive-aggressive barbs, and we assume that men don't feel those. We actually did a course where we had guys raise their hand every time they felt criticized. And the women were amazed that the men's hands were up through most of the course. And every time that happens, you're killing sensation. You're killing sensation and you're killing connection. And so when you really begin to cultivate your orgasm as a woman, that sensation and that connection becomes so vital that you begin to see the behaviors that kill it.
Wow. So so the practice actually sensitizes
right.
the participants to basically feel more all the time.
Right. Like as a woman, I was taught that a woman in the time of, you know, feminism, I was taught that it was important that I be able to handle myself and that I be strong. And one of the things that I say to women is, you know, we've empowered ourselves out of our own vulnerability and out of our own ability to connect. And these women come in with so little ability to receive, and they've done everything that they know to be a good person or a good woman, and they just don't realize. I hadn't realized we were just given the wrong information.
Wow. Yeah, no, that'll be the new motto for my book, which is feminism is dead, be happy instead.
Yeah. The war of the sexes is over.
Yeah, exactly. There's no war. Everything's fine. Now let's make you happy. And to corroborate what you said about men just wanting to please women, I believe it was Aristotle Onassis who said that all the monuments in the world, all the wealth in the world would mean absolutely nothing if it weren't for women. I mean, guys,
right.
they're just doing it to impress you and to make you happy. So, you know, as soon as you realize that we're just little boys trying to please you, then, you know, you understand men a hell of a lot better.
Mm. Yeah.
And what would be the obverse of that? So the version for the thing that women would like to convey to men.
I think men have very little idea what bare attention can do. I think often men feel like they have to do something, and they aren't sure what they're supposed to do, so they look away. And sometimes it's just that capacity to stay and maintain attention, whether she's going up or down or both, or, you know, like that is it's the same as the moment when he put bare attention on me at the beginning of the practice. Just that is so healing and so connecting. You know, we're taught that we're manic, we're too much, we're too dramatic. And so the minute a guy looks away, it actually increases that shame, and then we feel that shame, and then we get angry. And so this whole catch-22 keeps going around. So, like, you know, these guys are like, but I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do when she's like that. And so often I say, don't do anything. Just keep your attention there, and you'll notice that she'll go through all of these changes, and then she'll settle back down, and she'll be there with you.
No, that's great. That's very powerful. And to the men, I always say, you know, a compliment. A compliment is so powerful. It's just the fact that you're giving attention to a woman, and so many men, in the same way that you were saying that the women withhold and they don't want to dole out the goods, the men don't do it either. It's like you have this power to just go around and light up a woman's life. If you give a good compliment to a woman, she'll remember it for the rest of her life, let alone the day.
She will.
So just go forth and be giving of yourself. And I think so much of this practice is about doing that in a formalized setting such that it may actually seep into the rest of your life. You may actually become a better person afterwards.
Yeah. I think there's one other piece around this, and that is I think that often men, you know, what I hear is men think that women are being bitches and withholding. And I think men have no idea how hungry women are. That there's this, that we have such a deep desire for sex, and we are locked behind this bondage of conditioning, like the hoops we have to jump through just to make it into sexual connection are similar to the hoops a man has to jump through to make it into emotional connection. It's just crazy. And so I think it's a really key thing when we do another exercise where we have a woman say all of her, like he'll ask her, do you want to own? And then she says all of her thoughts that come up, and he just can't believe it, you know, that it's like this horrible experience inside of her head just to lie down.
Wow. And, you know, that's what's really great about this practice, which is it's very well circumscribed. It's kind of clean and tidy, and so it provides a structure in which people can express desire safely.
Right.
And
exactly.
Then you do that enough times, you break into, you know, expressing your desire more fully, perhaps in other spheres as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the idea. The idea is that I think so often we're taught how to fake it extremely well. My mom actually went to therapy once, and she said, I thought I was going to learn how to fake it better. She's actually trying to show me how to be real. And I think that we think we need to learn how to fake it better, and we look for more techniques. And it's that place of just coming back and having the permission to be real. And so in my mind, when you begin to fill up with enough orgasm that it overflows, that is the most compelling thing you can possibly do as a human being. That is where you get that deeper sense of underlying power rather than acting powerful.
Ah, real power.
Yeah,
and so much of feminine power is within pleasure. I mean, from two different ancient sources, you know, so there's the old myth about Tiresias. Tiresias was a mortal who, in ancient Greek mythology, he lived both as a woman and a man. So he was, you know, first he was walking down a path, he sees two snakes intertwined, he uses a staff to separate the two, and boom, in a flash he becomes a woman. So he spends 7 years as a woman and as a guy, as a woman who used to be a guy. What does he go and do? He basically has a lot of sex because now he can, and he really enjoys the 7 years. And then once again he's walked down the path, he separates the two snakes and becomes a man again. And so I think Hera and Zeus are having a debate, and they ask him, you know, so who has more fun? And he says that, you know, basically women have 10 times as much pleasure as men. Echoed again by Muhammad later on, you know, supposedly thousands of years later. And if you're a woman, well, you know that you can have multiple orgasms, and most men cannot. So here's this infinite well of happiness, joy, potential, and it can obliterate depression, and it just, you know, just makes you glow like a glow stick. So,
yeah, and I think, you know, it makes you generous. Like, so many of the women that I work with don't want to be mean, but they can't stop. They feel like they can't stop. In the same way that when you're really hungry for lunch, you feel grumpy and tight, and you do everything you can to be nice, but you can't. So many women are in that state permanently. And if you actually take the time to nourish your body the way it wants to be nourished, you don't have to try to be nice. You don't have to try to be generous. It's just your natural state.
Absolutely. And the point is, if you can have unlimited orgasms, really, why not?
Yeah. Seriously.
I mean, it's free and it's good for you. So Now, okay, so speaking of unlimited orgasms, so 15 minutes seems like a lot, but one of the chapters is called the 4-month orgasm. And what is this, and who can handle that?
Well, notice it's not called the 4-month climax. So I think the idea is that you can live, and here again, I'm so fortunate to be talking to you, and that I already know you know so much of this, so it's easier to speak to you. But the, you know, when you do a period of sitting meditation and you get that kind of concentration, and it feels like every single cell of your body is in a heightened state of potential, that is the state that you can live in, only it's rooted in your genitals when this is your practice.
Mm-hmm.
So that feeling right after you've made love with your partner all afternoon on a spring day, and you walk out and you feel like you can absorb every single scent, you know, the way the sweet peas smell and the feeling of the wind on your skin, like everything is awake. It's almost like you're looking through 3D glass that make you fall a little bit more in love with everything. That is the feeling that you get to have in your body when you have a deep enough practice.
Wow. And so there's a program that's deployed over 4 months?
I'm sorry?
So the 4-month orgasm, so it's a, is 4 months lead to this?
Well, we call it the 4-month orgasm because if we called it the forever orgasm, it would sound unrealistic.
Got it. So that's really a misnomer. It's just, you know, you're actually under-promising and over-delivering here.
Uh-huh. It's like that.
Very. Wouldn't want to overwhelm them with that much.
We felt like 4 months was palatable to most people.
Yeah. And so to my lovely audience members, all of this is accessible to you right now. And, you know, you don't even need to go get the book. I strongly recommend that you do. But this is all there. There's enough information online for you to figure it out on your own. And there's instruction by Nicole and her cohorts. They have a fabulous website, onetaste.us. And the point is that, you know, people, I don't know if you've read The Alchemist, but The Alchemist is an ages-old story. There are many stories like that. And the whole idea is that the treasure you have been seeking is usually right underneath your feet. And the very last thing that I say in the Tao Dating book is that, you know, you are the person you've been waiting for. So it's right here. It's imminent. It's at hand. And I'm just here to kind of catalyze your ability to go and get it. So whether it's through a bookstore, through a website, or just through your own initiative, the point is, unless you actually start doing the practice, nothing will change. So, you know, 15 minutes to potentially shift your entire life into having more joy, pleasure, connection, all that good stuff. Is there anything else you want to convey to the audience before we go to question and answer?
I think, let me see. I think one of the last things I want to say is often when people say, here's this book about sex, or here's this practice, one of the first things people say is like, oh, no, my sex life is great. And there's this presumption that the only reason you would want to learn more in this arena would be that something was wrong. And I think it's because we all feel so privately, secretly, inherently wrong in the arena of sex. And so I like one of the things, like when somebody says, no, my sex life is great, I say that's the best place to start because there's infinite potential as far as I can tell. You know, I haven't been doing this my entire life, but I haven't yet stopped in terms of discovery. So, I think we don't always have to phrase this arena as a problem.
Absolutely. And one of the reasons I like the Taoist approach, the Buddhist approach to these things is because it's really value judgment free, right? So, so much of the Judeo-Christian tradition binds up sexuality in guilt and prerogatives and proscriptions. And this is just about, hey, look, you know, here's another path to higher consciousness. Go for it, right?
Yeah.
No value judgment whatsoever. And so, you know, just add a structure that can get you to a place where you can feel good things as opposed to guilt, I think that's pretty darn useful. So why don't we open up to questions? So let's see. So what we want to do here is have you hand raise, and let me see. All right, so I'm going to mute and unmute. Let's see. If you want to hand raise, you want to hit 5-star on your phone. So if you have a question, hit 5-star. Let me see if that works here. If that doesn't work, then we'll just try the usual way of opening up all the lines, and you can just take turns. Okay. Let's see. All right. Well, then we'll do it the old-fashioned way.
Conference muted.
All right, so do we have any questions? Hello there. I know. Oh, actually, 5-star did work, shockingly enough. All right, great. We have New York City. Hi.
Hello.
There. What's this?
Hi.
You have a pseudonym if you want.
I don't think I'm going to. Can you hear me?
Yeah,
hi.
I can hear you.
How are you?
Christine.
It's good, good. I'm good. Nicole, my question is about if you don't have a partner, what does this practice have for you?
Brilliant. So we actually have developed 3 different tracks. One is if you have a partner, one is if you're a man and you don't have a partner, and one is if you're a woman and you don't have a partner. And the whole question of desire is at the root of orgasm. And so there's, all of the experience around not having a partner, around determining that your orgasm is important. I went through, I didn't have a partner when I actually decided to take this on as a practice, and so I didn't know what to do. And so I thought, well, this is really important to me, and I went and I asked my ex-boyfriend if he would come and learn with me. And it began to reorient all of my ideas around my orgasm being important, around I had to be preparing to marry somebody if I were to allow them to touch my genitals, and what it would mean if I were to ask my, my ex to touch me or to learn with me. And that in itself is, I learned more about my unpacked views of relationship by not having a partner and deciding I wanted to take this practice on. It was incredible.
By the way, if I may chime in, mm-hmm. You are never more than one question away from having a partner. So, the scarcity view is there is no partner. The abundance view is there are 3.5 billion willing men out there. You just have to ask one of them.
Yeah, and my experience is that is surprisingly true. I think, most of the negotiation, I would say my experience is that, 99.9% of the negotiation is going to happen inside. I work with so many women. I almost never see a woman have a man say no. Almost never.
Yep, and also realize that this is the kind of thing. I mean, so people have asked me to summarize adult dating, in 2 minutes, and I give them the 3-word version, which is be the light. And when you are the light, this is one of the things that turns you into the light. You start to glow when you start to have, this many orgasms. You are going to become a beacon, and guys are going to be going, who's that, and why does she glow? So the lack of partner is not going to last. Great question. Fantastic question.
And then
does that cover it for you?
Yeah. If I may just say 2 more things really, really quickly. One is... I love what you were saying, just ask, and ask in present time, and then notice if you're asking in a way that's asking somebody to say no. If you have preemptive disappointment, and one of the things that I find is that that's another, a whole other meditation in itself is the practice of asking.
Wow, that's powerful. Asking in a way that expects the no.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right, and recognize that the barrier to that, the barrier to, you know, asking that guy is the same barrier to having a guy in your life. It's a very similar thing. Not all that different.
Well said.
What do you deserve? Do you deserve pleasure? Do you deserve joy? Do you deserve togetherness and trust? Fantastic. All right. So if you want to ask a question, apparently it does work. 5-star makes you raise your virtual hand, and then I can find you. Or you can just chime in. But I think some of you are still muted, so you need to do the 5-star thing. So I'll, in the meantime, I will ask a question.
Okay.
And that is, so I know you're based in San Francisco, so that's where the classes happen. Are there other places where people can come and take classes?
Yes. Well, we have a satellite center in New York City, mm-hmm. and then we have, at this point, I think we have 60 trainers. So all the way, and we have them in Israel, in Czechoslovakia, and throughout the United States. So you can look on our website and see where there's a live trainer. And then we also, you know, like I fly to L.A. pretty regularly, or, you know, I fly to New York. And then the other thing is we do Skype coaching.
Oh, wow. So that pretty much opens it up to, say, the whole planet?
Like that, yeah, exactly.
Like that. And you know what? The information can be conveyed perfectly well over Skype.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it transmits. I mean, it transmits. We have a little video, and it's amazing how many people all you know, I just went to an event at Singularity last night, and there were these people who came up to me and said, oh, we've been doing the practice for 6 months, and we learned from the video. So apparently it works.
It totally does work. And
yeah.
And again, you know, whatever it takes to get you there is fine, right? There's all these various crutches. You know, the knowledge is already out there. Whatever structure it requires you to be channeled into where you need to go, cool. Just get there. All right, so we have area code 443 with a question. Hey there, how are you?
Hey, how you doing?
Hi.
Oh, an actual dude. This is awesome. Welcome. So what's the and your name?
Andrew.
Andrew, what's the question for Nicole?
I have a lot of research on your book. I haven't read it, actually. I've sort of just stumbled across this, but I've done a lot of research in other areas, and I wanted to know where you feel method coincides with energy transfer.
Huh. That's a great question. And I have to tell you, I'm not a scientist, I get very nervous when people start talking like scientists who aren't, so you should know that. Although I live with a scientist, and I'm surrounded by crazy scientists. And one of the things that we're doing a lot of research right now with neuroscientists and such, and one of the things that they're looking at is this idea of limbic resonance. Are you familiar with this?
I've heard a little bit about it, yeah.
So that there's, you know, there's this part of the human brain that is there simply to feel into the states of other human beings. So, for example, when a baby is pressed up against its mother's chest, the baby's heartbeat begins to coincide with the mother. That's limbic resonance, when there's that kind of way that we balance each other out. And that's one of the things that begins to happen in this practice, is where you develop that kind of connection underneath the surface, where you can, you know, it may sound crazy, it would have sounded crazy to me, but where your partner can walk in and, you know, quietly, where it's not that you're hearing them, but you actually feel them viscerally in your body. There's that kind of connection.
Right. I've experienced that type of connection. I basically can't get any kind of solid information on it. I've looked at meditation areas, Buddhist, Tantra, even massage, healing hand techniques, and what you're doing sounds interesting, that it kind of delves into that area.
I would look at read the book General Theory of Love, and they have the best, most accessible science on this that I know of.
Okay.
General Theory of Love.
Great book. Great book.
Yeah, no, I mean, primates, and especially humans, we have a whole set of dedicated neurons called mirror neurons, and their job is to feel what other people feel. It's crazy.
I know, and then it's just, it sounds so woo-woo. That's the funny thing. But
yeah, it sounds
is.
Like this, like what action at a distance, it travels through the ether, but it can actually synchronize your heart rate, your breathing rate, even your blood pressure. It's crazy.
Yeah,
I noticed that you said you don't really subscribe to the woo-woo kind of thing, but you did mention that when both partners are focused on the same point, you kind of, I feel, in my personal experience, is it's sort of like an energy transfer. You get tuned into your partner, and you feel what they feel and vice versa.
Yeah, I think, well, the reason I don't like woo-woo is because I have so much reverence for actual experience. And so, it is very difficult to put language on that kind of depth of experience. As you describe it, as you circumambulate it, I can feel, like you're pointing to it in a way that I can tell that we've probably been to some of the same places. And we don't yet have language for it. I studied semantics, and, things that people don't think are important, we don't develop language for. And I'm very interested in developing language about these particular states and this particular kind of connection.
Yeah, I agree. I like the direction that you're going with it, and I agree with there isn't enough information, there isn't enough language or enough people talking about it to really get the point across in a way that everybody will understand.
Right, that doesn't hit an immune response of it just seeming weird.
Right. Great, excellent question, Andrew. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank
and,
you.
We're getting close to the end of the hour here. So, Nicole, can you take a couple more questions if there are?
Sure, of course.
Okay, superb. So, 5-star does the hand-raising trick. And here we have area code 602, which is where? As I unmute here. Yes, so 602, where is that?
It's Arizona, but I'm not there yet.
Okay, then. How you doing? Welcome to the call. And what's your name?
Dane.
Dane, and what is the question, Dane?
So this might be a little bit beyond the energy transfer potentials, but I will be moving to Arizona. My partner is going to be here in Indiana for the next 10 months. Is this something... I probably will be getting the book because I get into that kind of stuff, but is this something that could be practiced in with a partner, kind of a long distance? Now, whether the long distance thing is going to work, that's kind of another story, but...
Wow. I've never been asked that question before. That is a great question. And, I don't
Maybe
know.
Maybe the Skype thing would help since you guys do the...
Well, yeah. I mean, I would definitely introduce Skype into my relationship. And then I can tell you that my experience again and again is, one of the things that I say, I teach a lot of communication to support the practice, is that mm-hmm. honesty is verbal orgasm. And it is amazing how, when people say, well, what's the first way for a couple to come back together? And I say, tell that person a truth you've never said. And I have done these extreme radical practices of just saying anything that's on my mind at any given point, like to my partner.
Yeah, the radical honesty book.
Eating.
That's a good one.
Yeah, and just begin to open that sensation and explore. That's the closest I know to come in terms of, long distance. And then I would do some Skype some Skype discovery, and there are definitely some exercises in the book that you can do to begin to explore this whole realm of your desire and your connection with your partner.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Thank
yeah.
you.
Good luck.
Thanks. All right. Great. So, and before we attend to the last question or two, what else do the audience members need to know to get a hold of you and your work besides onetaste.us?
Onetaste.us, the book is Slow Sex, The Art and Craft of the Female Orgasm. We have a great new program coming out next week called Goldfinger, where we will only be accepting so many people.
God,
but
did
for
not say that.
Pardon?
You did not say that, Goldfinger.
We did. I did. It's funny, Pete. You I know what's so funny is that I let the guys name it. I said, what would you guys want to name it? And they came up with all these funny things and Cold Fingers, what they called it, because it was, you know, they're cheeky like that. But it is a pretty intensive program that can bring you to a pretty deep level in your practice.
Awesome. So I want to ask you one last question before we go to the final question or two. By the way, if you have a question, now is the time to hand raise. You hand raise by hitting 5-star on your phone, 5-star. That pops up here on my screen as a hand raising. And at one point in the book, or maybe during our conversation, but somewhere I attribute a quote to Nicole Dadone, and it was that everything a woman wants can be found in her orgasm.
Mm-hmm.
Could you elaborate on that, please?
Well, I think what we want is a deep sense of, I think it's very simple, a deep sense of nourishment, connection, and self-awareness. And then we want that inside of a field of pleasure. And that, to me, is really what the practice of orgasm can bring about. Like, there's this great quote about slow, about how when it all boils down, the things that matter to us are slow things. It's like being with your friends, being with your family, eating well, resting, enjoying your life. And your orgasm can bring you back to those states of the things that really define your life.
Awesome. I think that's great explanation. And let's see if we have a final question here. Final question for Nicole. Let's see. 5-star. 5-star raises your hand, and then I can attend to you. And in the absence of a final question, I'll do a quick recap. So Dr. Ali Benazir here, and we just had Nicole Dadone, founder of OneTaste.us and author of the brand spanking new book, Slow Sex, The Art and Craft of the Female Orgasm, and fabulous resources. And I encourage all of you to seek out the book and find the videos online, check out the website, and really set a date, set a deadline, say, okay, by this time next week, I will have tried this at least once. If you are a woman who does not have a partner, well, guess what? You just have to ask one guy, and you will have a partner. So that is and there's no shortage of guys out there last time I checked. And if you are a guy, well, guess what? This is your path to sexual superstardom, and maybe from there you'll go to somewhere even bigger than that. And with that, I'd like to thank all of you. So let me see if I can do a little...
Conference muted.
So, all of you, I'd like you to say a big thank you to Nicole. Thank you, Nicole.
Thank you.
Thanks, Nicole.
And that was fabulous, Nicole. Thank you so much. And I'm hoping...
Thank you. It's great talking to you. Great. I'm glad you're out there.
Thank you.
Excellent. And by the way, the people who joined were spellbound the entire time. They all stayed on to the very end. So.
Thanks.
Excellent. Everybody, thank you so much, Dr. Ali Benazir, and we'll have more good stuff for you coming up soon, and we'll put this up on the website so you can download and listen to it at your leisure. And good night, everyone.